Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And I think that my guest today, his book, The Lost Season, Jeffrey's book surprised me. I had expectations that it was going to be discussing a particular aspect regarding human relationships and sports and this type of thing. And what I found is that not only was it a book with a story that relates very strongly to his own personal experience, but it is also the story of a man as he grew into his own understanding. And inasmuch as Father's Day is coming up in just a few days, this coming weekend, I think that it really is a nice compliment to the celebration of what I feel is the recognition of the manhood of the male that one male needs, every male that I know of needs to go through to find who and what they really are. Jeffrey Beers, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Jeffrey, you're a man that has had quite an interesting background. You coached sports in high school and college. You got a master's degree in education. You got a degree, a master's degree in psychology. I mean, you have been on the educational treadmill for most of your life. What made you sit down and decide that you were going to put this story together about a sports coach and a bartender?
What made me decide, I guess, is my experience led me to believe that there was a lot more to life than what's in a job. And the amount of pressure, the amount of change that I saw in society with regards to kids and sports was mind-boggling to me. And it was so easy to get wrapped up into it while I was in the middle of it that I wasn't able to see it until I got away from it, stepped back, and looked at it.
And now, let's go into a little bit of that. What were you coaching? Were you coaching football, basketball, tennis?
Actually, I was coaching basketball.
Okay.
And I wrote the story about football mostly just so that I could create different names and keep everybody else out of the story that maybe didn't want to be in it.
Gotcha. Now, with your coaching, you made a statement that you had to step back. What were you seeing? What was the big change with sports, being involved as a coach in the high school, college level? What were the biggest changes that you observed?
Well, there were two really profound moments near the end of my coaching career that changed everything. And one was we played a couple rival opponents and beat them quite badly. We scored over 100, and I think they both scored around 30. And what I was always under the belief at the time is, as a coach, what you're supposed to do is take the press off and put in your substitutes. And then the game is just to be played as it is. And we did both of those things early in the second quarter. And then I had backups and JV players playing the rest of the way, but they were so well prepared and so good that they just kept extending the lead. And those coaches, both coaches, walked off the floor without shaking our hands. And they were both extremely upset about the situation. And at the coaches' meeting at the end of the season, one of them became really belligerent in a public place. And I asked him to step outside and talk to me just because there was kids around. And he would be screaming at the top of his lung, using curse words and everything else. And that got me to stop and realize that no matter what I do and what I think, somebody else is going to have a different impression. I came to realize immediately that both of those coaches were very sincere in their feelings. They believed what they were saying. And they believed that I was intentionally trying to hurt them which I didn't even consider them. It wasn't about them. It was about our kids and our players.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big moment, knowing that that situation would happen again because I would not change the way that I coached, and not really wanting to be the cause of that much pain in another person, which I hadn't given that any thought in 20 years of coaching before because that issue had never come up. That changed my view a little bit.
That really intrigues me, because when you work with your players, and the most people will say, and I've heard this from a number of coaches, you go out there because you're supposed to win. This is it. Now, John Wooden had a different attitude with his players. He would say, I want you to give the best of what you've got. I want you to learn how to be a team. I want you to give the best that you've got. And when you have adults that display, adult men that display this kind of behavior in front of kids instead of acting like adult men, I mean, this is just a woman's perspective. I would say there would be a question in my mind about those men, because there is something about them that has never grown up, because they couldn't do otherwise. The one that was losing his cool, and that is one of the reasons that I asked you the question I did, because so many times, whether it's parents or coaches, they will display a behavior. It's like it's not about the game, the spirit of the game, the enthusiasm, the training, because I think sports is one of the greatest forms of discipline, and I use plural because there's so many different modalities that you can engage in, swimming, basketball, football, whatever. And I look at that, and I just think that a good coach has such an important effect on kids. It's just a phenomenal job. And your story, The Lost Season, it takes place in a town called Plainsville. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jared is you in the book. You're putting a lot of you in the book, obviously.
Right.
And you bring up a concept about how, in a different way, the feeling of having things stacked against you because people don't want you to do something with the players. And that was a terrific way to start off the book. Was that an actual experience for you?
Yeah, everything in that book was an actual experience.
Tell us what it was you were told by
the only thing that isn't actual in the book is Isha the Bartender. That is, Isha the Bartender is an overarching idea of everything that I've read in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was exactly as it happened.
Now, one of the things that you were told is that you were never to ever use prayer. That was something that, before the game, that you did.
Mm-hmm. I was never told that directly, so for 20 years I just did it automatically, always with my players in all sports. Actually, I coached girls' tennis and boys' tennis. I was the head coach for those two sports, also for 7 of those 20 years of coaching. And then, so throughout all of my coaching, I always did that. Until one time near the end of my career, actually right around that last season, I was approached by the athletic director and told not to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's a very special twist in your book that I thought was just absolutely awesome, and I'm not going to give that away. You make a statement in your book, and this is right in the beginning, Isha, who is a bartender, and I love this contrast that you have in the book. An image in the mind is every bit as real as an image on television. And so you really go into the philosophical aspect and understanding of the power of the mind and the emotions and how it affects your performance in life. And this I found intriguing, because here is this man, it's a bartender, nondescript, really, and yet there's this tremendous dialogue. For me, it was like, sometimes what you think you see is not what you really are going to see, and that's what your book does.
That's cool. I like that.
It takes you into a different space. And when I first perceived that, I said, oh, my goodness. Also, the words, pure awareness is one's authentic self, and it can only be attained through personal experience. And so your book goes into this experience, and you're growing through all of this new understanding that Isha is sharing with you. Now, here you had in your own life, and it's portrayed in the book, in the story format you've got, you have your own life where you became aware that change was necessary. When you were at that point, what was it like for you to be able to shift into a new modality? So many people today are facing that. You were a coach. You were the one that was telling other people what to do. You were the one that was inspiring them. You were the one that was there and giving them the best of everything you had. And you were shifting now from that modality into another one. What was that like for you?
Life-changing, job-dropping, extremely powerful. That first year that I was away from coaching was absolutely unbelievable. I had worked for 20 years as both a teacher and a coach, and when I got away from coaching and all I was doing was teaching, I felt like I was on vacation. All of a sudden I was only working one job instead of two, and I didn't realize how all-consuming coaching had become. And so that year away, I did, for the first time, an incredible amount of self-exploration and self-realization. I would go on long walks and just read and write and contemplate where I am and what is the meaning and importance of life. And, I for the first time stopped thinking about sports and started thinking about everything else beyond that and things that to me are much more important about life. And the sports and the competition is not ever what was important to me. The only thing that was ever important to me was the players and having a relationship with them and mm-hmm. the cooperation that can be built and the teamwork and the togetherness, and all that was so powerful. And that last year, I felt like that went away. People seemed like they forgot the importance of cooperation, and it all became about the competition. And that mm-hmm. left a sour taste in my mouth. So getting away from all of that and focusing on life, just the aspect of being, is what changed everything for me. All of a sudden, there was just a tremendous underlying peace that I'd never experienced before. And that all came from just being present.
Mm-hmm. There is commentary throughout your book, and my highlighter was quite busy. And it said, soon we discover we must wear many different masks that are required to fit into society because everyone has different expectations of us. And I thought, wow, that is so true. And we are taught this in society. We're taught this by all kinds of people we come in contact with. And this is something for us to be able to recognize these different masks that we wear. That's a challenge. That's not an easy thing to do. Did you recognize your mask?
When I got away from coaching, yeah. When I stopped coaching, that was a huge... For me, the reason that stood out so much is because so much of my identity was wrapped around being a coach. I mean, everybody referred to me as coach.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody I saw, almost everybody, especially everybody that's around school, it was always Coach Beers. And so having that away, being away from that and getting rid of that label and that idea of myself, I think it shook my own foundations of what it is to be a person and caused me to look at myself outside of coaching much more than I ever did before. And that was a big mask for me, is the coaching mask. But But, you know, then it started, I started to recognize all the other masks, the father mask and the teacher mask and the, you know, it just goes on and on and on that you have all these different roles that we're expected to play. Not that it's all shaped by society, because we choose the mask we want to wear based on how people react to us and how it feels when those reactions come. And so we're obviously a co-creator in all of that. But to step back and look at it and recognize it for what it is made me want to get rid of it. I didn't want to have any of those masks and just find out who is the authentic person that's going through this personal life experience and be that.
You use the word authentic, and I have in front of me two sentences in a section of your book. The authentic self does not need positive reinforcement. The authentic self is partaking in the chosen activity for the sheer joy of creating. And that relates to your word just being, B-E-I-N-G. It's a little word,
right,
but it can denote so much for an individual. And you also say when we can look at our lives independent of the emotional arousal that it encompasses us, and see it with clarity rather than look through a veil of emotion that conceals reality. Oh, and those emotions just run the gauntlet. I mean, it's something that I don't know of any human being that hasn't had to deal with that, including yourself. And when those emotions run rampant, that's usually when we make a poor decision. And
right,
your character, Isha, is just such a fascinating. I love that he's a bartender. I mean, he is just a total contradiction. He's serving alcohol, and he's in a bar, and that is the last place in the world that you would expect to find this very, very thoughtful, deep philosopher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's to me, it is a powerful contradiction, and those are the places that people like that are needed and appreciated the most. You know, it's just like actually being a teacher. I spent a good portion of my coaching career at an inner city school, and most of the players that I worked with had one or no parents involved. And so the role that I took in that community was quite a bit different than the school that I'm at now, which is most kids have both parents that are heavily involved. You know, there's much more community support for their kids. And so, you know, when you find yourself in a situation around people in need, all of a sudden it, I think, becomes easier to be authentic and to just be present for that person and be available for them. And so Isha the bartender is kind of a representation of being in a place where it's most needed.
You say the most effective way to provide extrinsic motivation to a person is to give intermittent reinforcement so that he or she never knows when it is coming, and then will not make a mental connection between the actual reinforcement and the performance. I think any good teacher, anyone, who, whatever their costume may be, whether it's a police officer, it could be a teacher in a school, a coach like yourself, it could be an issue the bartender like you have in your book, they will know how to slip in remarks that seem to nourish the heart, mind, and soul of whoever is there in that moment. I know of a checker at a grocery store who does that. She affects the lives of so many people. The people stand in line just to wait for her to wait on them because of what she emits. Her name is Selma. She's just a wonderful woman. And I just find that is so important. And that's something as a coach that you recognize as invaluable in bringing your team together.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important to find moments to be able to give words of encouragement and reassurance to somebody and to recognize how does that work in the person. Throughout my career as a coach, there were some kids that would respond in an amazing way with just a few words of encouragement. And then there were other kids that once you gave them those words of encouragement, they almost went the opposite direction. It was like, oh, okay, my job is done now. I guess I'm where I'm supposed to be. So they all of a sudden wouldn't be putting forth the effort. So it was like a kind of a pick and choose. When are you going to provide those words of reinforcement, and when are you going to hold back on them, and how are you going to deliver it? And it, oftentimes, really, there's so much variety in people, it has to be delivered in different ways. And I think the best coaches and teachers or anybody that's trying to send a message to somebody gains a understanding of the person who's receiving the message. That's the most important part, is the person ready to receive the message? It's like that old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to study the student.
I agree. And the diversity is always a challenge, because sometimes
right.
you think you've got it made, and maybe something happens in their personal life that you're not aware of, and all of a sudden they've made a shift, and you're going, uh-oh, something's changed in the script here. What do we deal with now? What's happening now? So all that comes with wisdom and experience. And one of the challenges that Jared has to deal with is really becoming aware of who Jared is. And that, again, is your story. Your story is costumed and staged in this Plainsville environment. And you expose yourself in such interesting ways throughout the book. And the conversations with the bartender just seem to have such a richness to them, and it provides such a visual. You can just see you sitting on a bar stool talking to this guy, and he's taking care of orders. He's not all that busy, and just seems like whenever you're in there in the story, that there's always the opportunity for him to talk with you. And mm-hmm. it seems like Wisdom has a way of bringing herself into positioning with moments like that. Did you find that that was a synchronistic occurrence that was quite frequent with you?
Of bringing Wisdom into the moment?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's always there available, and all we have to do is be open to receive it. You know, there's a life lesson in every single thing that we do. And so it's just like, no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, I think if we just pay attention and ask ourselves, what is the lesson here? And there is one.
mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of asking a question.
You had a wonderful example in your book where Isha, in communicating with Jared, said, how is it that we don't see that warring with each other is like thumb wrestling against ourselves? If my left thumb overpowers my right thumb, do I win? And I thought, boy, that is really a good example. Who wins with that kind of warring? Not anybody, really.
Yeah, right. I know. It's an amazing concept when you think about, that's the idea to, I was thinking more of war, you know, warring against each other. Why would we do that? I mean, that's a, when you think about that as a concept of the of humanity, it becomes so, I guess, survival of the fittest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start talking about all those ideas, but we're at a place that's so far beyond that now, and yet we're not. You know, there's so much broader understanding in the world today than there was before, and we can see more clearly what that type of fighting against each other brings, which is nothing but suffering. And yet we still find ourselves doing it all the time.
Your observations and your commentary throughout the book really give someone material to chew on mentally. And one of your statements is, if we would stop placing ourselves in other people's stories, we might actually become better listeners. To become a good listener is a real important skill. And to be able to step aside, just as that statement creates the wisdom of being able to do that, we can learn more about compassion and understanding and an awareness of what goes on with someone. And your comment, and I think there's so many women that try to get this across to the guys in their life, they want to talk. They don't want you to give them answers. They just want someone to listen
right.
to them. And I
right.
think there are men that do this too, but men communicate differently than the women do. But women especially say, just listen. I don't want your opinions. I just want you to listen to me. We just listen. But that happens in many, many different ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it would be helpful if more women would say what you just said. Just listen. I don't need to hear a response. I just want you to hear me. I have had some of my women friends say that, and that's what opened my eyes to it. I'm like, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, it's like they're not looking for an answer. They just want to be heard. And that is different than men. When men communicate, they actually are looking for ideas and suggestions, typically. Of course,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we're only speaking in generalities. But and women more want to just express themselves. And when they're allowed to do that, they just feel so much better. Men sometimes are like, well, if you're not coming up with the response, then you must not really be listening to what I'm saying. So that's a difference in how we communicate. But to me, the most important part of listening is to get out of the mind dialogue. Because what I learned is, myself as a listener, while I'm hearing somebody talk, all of a sudden I noticed that my mind was in dialogue, trying to prepare for an answer, so that when they get done talking, I'll have a response. But then what I'm doing is I'm actually filtering what they are saying through my own experience and my own mind, and so I'm missing a good part of the message that's being sent. And am I truly listening at that point? It doesn't seem like I am. I'm not really being present. So what I learned to do is just start repeating everything that the person is saying word for word. Then there's only one voice in the head, hopefully. And as long as I keep that voice directing towards what the person is saying, then I'm no longer listening to it with a filter. And what happens is pretty soon the voice dies away because you get so absorbed into what the person is saying, you're no longer repeating what they're saying. You're just hearing it out completely with no mind dialogue. And to me, that's true listening.
I agree. And I think that's one of the many gifts that your story gives. Jeffrey, this probably has created quite a shift in your life. You're putting into this book this wonderful expression of your own gain in wisdoms as a man, and you're relating to the sports arena that has been such a love of your life and such a joy, and at the same time been such a teacher for you. It has taught you a lot. The Lost Season, and Jeffrey Beers is my guest today, and it's J-E-F-F-R-Y, Beers, B-E-E-R-S, and he doesn't have a website yet. He is putting one together, but you can go to exlibris.com, and if you're interested in the book itself or finding out more about the material he has and what he does, jeffreybeers@gmail.com is the email that you can reach him through. jeffreybeers@gmail.com. Jeffrey, your book has a lot of power in it. It's got a lot of wisdom. And I think that as a man, you've given a gift by telling your story in such a wonderful format. I love The Coach and the Bartender. I think it's wonderful. Thank you for being my guest today, Jeffrey.
Thank you very much. I appreciated talking to you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break, and when we come back, I'm going to have more good things to share with you. Check out The Lost Season, Jeffrey Beers. And if you wanted to give a gift to the guy in your life, be sure to send Jeffrey Beers an email. That's the quickest way to get the copy of the book, Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-Y, Beers@gmail.com. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance your physical needs with your busy schedule is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors. A bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. It can be used anytime, anywhere. First thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. And as a weight loss appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used. No caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Visit Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to corporatedirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for corporatedirect.com.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com.
Or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, tomorrow we are going to be celebrating Father's Day also. How to be a great dad no matter what kind of father you've had. This is a very powerful book. And I think that Keith Zaffron has done an incredible job. And the role of the father in life is an extremely important one. And how that image, that support affects us. Well, I've got a story I'm going to be sharing with you about that. And tomorrow we'll be talking about Keith and how he is helping men from all walks of life, along with many other individuals who are trying to show the men, the young men, men of all ages actually, how they can be very good fathers and be good father role models for maybe those that don't have one. Very significant book. Also, next week, we've got a great lineup of information that is going to come your way. Have you seen those attorneys advertising on television? And, oh, you get all these ads. Well, it used to be that wasn't legal. Well, today you have all kinds of stuff to pop up on the television screen. And my guest is going to be an attorney himself. His name is Ben Glass. He said, the truth about attorneys and advertising. Boy, is he going to be open and outspoken about it. Good information to be aware of. And then we're going to be talking with a man who is dedicated to bodybuilding. His name is Dan Torres. He is very much involved in making the world a healthier place. He's an entrepreneur. He has been involved with the development. He's an inventor. He's just one of these people that loves to make things better. So we're going to be chatting with him on Tuesday. And then if you've ever had problems with in-laws or relatives, I think that Dr. Brand has put together an awesome book called Reluctantly Related. And, oh, some of it is so funny and some of it will just make you squirm. But anyway, great deal. Leap of Perception, Penny Pierce next week, and then the Phoenix Success Strategy with W.L. Lanny. We have got a dynamic lineup of people, and boy, are you going to have a powerhouse of information that is going to be made available to you. That's what my show is all about. I like bringing all kinds of people to the format of media so that you can be aware of the choices that are in front of you as a person. It's very, very important. I also like to give you the opportunity, if you'd like for me to assist you with my intuitive skills, to call me at 888-627-6008, and I will be happy to share my insights with you. And if you have a particular problem you're concerned about, just ask the question after I finish. Well, there is a woman by the name of Rebecca Callahan, and she had a story to share. It was about a particular Father's Day. It was just before the celebration of Father's Day. And she said she just always had this sense of unhappiness whenever Father's Day came around. Well, her dad had died quite young. And even though that was totally out of her control, there was always this feeling she had missed something. And this one day, she had a very profound experience. She was sort of in what I'd call the pity pot of thought and bemoaning the fact that she had missed something very special, not having a dad. And then there was this voice that she heard in her head. You have three fathers. Where did that thought come from? She has three fathers. And she began to think about it. Her mom had remarried, and her stepdad was absolutely wonderful, and she was very upset when they got married, and sometimes was a pretty obnoxious person. But she said he never stopped being thoughtful, and he didn't try to take the place of my dad, but he was a male role model, and he was a very nice person, and he always made sure that we were taken care of. And she said, I don't know why, but I'd never thought of him that way. And then, she said, there was her granddad. Her granddad had, after her father died, had really looked after both her and her brother when her mom went to work. And he was always willing to talk to her and always willing to listen. And then after she got married, she had a father-in-law who was just a wonderful man. And she said, you know what? I really did. I don't know where that thought came from. I don't know why it came into my head. But she said, I really did have three fathers. Each of these men gave me support. Each of these men, in their own way, taught me lessons I needed to be aware of. And each of these men protected me in the best way that they knew how. And she at this time is expecting a baby, and she said, after that wake up of awareness about the positive positioning of these three men in my life, I realized I didn't need to continue to grieve for the dad that wasn't around, because I had three fathers that had affected my life in a very special way. I wanted to share that story with you because I think it's a very poignant one. How many times do we look at what we don't have, thinking we've missed out on something, and we are not aware of what's around us, maybe been around us to support us, that actually is taking care of the need that we have? It's a fascinating positioning to find yourself in, and I think Rebecca was blessed in a very, very special way. Okay, let's get on with a summer horoscope. We have already talked about Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. So I'm going to go with Cancer and Capricorn today. Cancer, by golly, you are going to just be doing a tap dance apparently through this year. There is such a joy inside of you. You are really going to find that this year is your year. You are going to really enjoy your summer. And when it comes to money, you are going to, if you take the time to prepare yourself, move into that positioning of synchronicity, of being able to be in the right place at the right time to find exactly what you need in the way of a job. Also, keep up with your education because it is really going to make a difference. And if you want to move forward, don't be afraid to shift into another modality that is going to dovetail with your skills and talents. Be open to the unusual and the unique. Also, if you're going to be traveling, it's going to be, I think, to areas where there's water. You're going to enjoy either being a coast or in a lake environment, someplace where there's the coolness of water this summer. Well, you'd say if it's hot, that's a natural thing. Yes, it is. But there's something about water. You're being under the sign of Cancer that really makes a difference. It's very healing for you. If you're stressed, it's really a wonderful thing for you to experience. So just know your travel. Plan it carefully. Enjoy it. You're not going to be doing a whole bunch of it, but what you do, if you plan it out, you're going to find that it'll bring you many, many good memories and gifts. For those of you born under the sign of Capricorn, you're getting your domestic house in order. You really like to keep things in their proper place, and you want to be able to clear the slate. So any loose ends that you may have in your life, you're wanting to put them into their proper positioning. Either that, or you're going to get rid of them. So you're not going to fool around by putting yourself into too many different directions because that's going to take away the focus that you need for this summer. And you're going to find that because you're going to be more focused, and that you are going to concentrate on taking care of those loose ends, you're going to be more successful with money. That's right. You're going to be able to look at how you can let certain things go. Maybe you're going to have a garage sale. Maybe you're just going to make a few trips to the Goodwill, the Salvation Army, or some charity that needs some of the things that you want to get rid of. You're going to make space. You're going to bring space for the new. You're creating space. Getting rid of what really is no longer needed, making space for the new. And that is also going to increase the dollars in your pocket. Now, this is a very good time for you under the sign of Capricorn. If you're wanting to look at how you can take your money and make it work more effectively for you through investments of one type or another, this is the time for you to do your checking things out. Make it so that you save as much as you can so that in 2014, then you can make that investment and smile all the way to the bank when you see the dividends coming in. And shop. Keep your eyes and ears and be sure to let your friends know, everybody you know, if you're looking for something special, especially if it's a big ticket item, you might have an opportunity to buy something at such a good price that it will meet with your frugality regarding the management of your money. You'll have your cake and you'll eat it too, as the old saying goes. So be aware. We are going to be taking a break for just a moment. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to tell you again, the number to call in if you'd like to chat with me is 888-627-6008. So many spots in the United States have been hit very hard with storms. Tornadoes, I mean, it's just been unbelievable, the stuff that's gone on. And I know this is the time of the year for tornadoes. I mean, Tornado Alley is notorious for the experiences that people have there. But when these natural disasters hit, not only are people's homes destroyed, but many times they're put into an economic situation where their pets, they're just not able to take care of them, or sometimes they actually lose them. Now, there are so many open-hearted, generous people when it comes to animals, and there is a story I want to share with you. But before I do that, I want to say that if you are a person that really wants to support the Humane Society, there's so many other groups, that, and I'm going to give you some information on them, in your own local area. And lots of times people are not in a situation where they can help somebody in Oklahoma, but maybe they can, you know, donate a little money to different groups that go and assist in these areas. But sometimes right in our own neighborhood, we have people that love their pets, but maybe they've hit the emotional skid and they're really having challenges. And most people, I find, have a strong sense of pride. They don't want their neighbors to know that they're hurting or they're in need. Well, there are some wonderful organizations that people can go to. And if any of you listening have a challenge about being able to feed your pet, you can go to these following organizations, usually your state's health department, and you can find out either by calling, or you can go to the usa.gov/agencies/state-and-territories.shtml. They can help you find a traditional food bank that stocks pet food. And you can also go to Georgia's Save Our Pets Food Bank. It has a listing of nearly 40 unaffiliated food banks across the country. And what you do is go to saveourpetsfoodbank.org/national-locations.php. And there's a company called BogoBowl.com. You can get your dog food from them. And when you do, they'll donate a free bag of dog food to someone in need in your community. And you can check with all kinds of different organizations and just see what you can do. Check with your local Humane Society. They also could tell you about the different food banks that might be available that can help people, elderly, but it's not just the elderly. You know, we often think it's just the elderly. It isn't. Sometimes there's young families, and they love their pet. And let's face it, raising a pet is like raising a child. Depending on the breed of your dog, you're going to be taking care of that animal or animals for, could be up to 17 years. Yes, dependent on the breed of the dog or the cat. Cats live such a long time. But you've got all of these things that need to be taken care of. Now, there's a wonderful man. His name is Tom Wargo. And he just had a soft spot. He could not ever let a hungry animal pass him by. He always made sure that he had extra dog food with him or cat food. And there was a woman he happened to see when he was doing some volunteer work. And she was an elderly lady, and she was sitting on her porch. And he noticed a container that she'd opened up that had the logo of a local food bank. And she was eating food, human food, and she took a few bites, and then she put the rest of the contents into several bowls on her porch. Well, you can figure the rest of it out. There were cats that she was feeding. So this tiny elderly lady was eating a little bit and was giving the rest to the animals because they were hungry too. And he said, oh my goodness, she's going hungry so that these animals will not starve. And when he was a kid growing up, his mother would always fuss at him in a loving way. Oh my goodness, who have you brought home today? Because he'd find strays and he'd always bring them home. And it just followed him, this patterning, up into his adult life. And there was one day at work, and he sees this little dog, and it was a black dog. And this dog just walks up to him, tail wagging. And it was pretty young, didn't have a collar on, was very skittish. And Tom said, gee whiz, I just don't know what I can do. And then the dog all of a sudden took off, which puppies will do. And the dog reappeared. And what Tom realized is that the dog, for some reason, decided that he was going to adopt Tom. That's right. This dog had zeroed in on Tom, even though he was a puppy, saying, this is going to be my owner. This guy's going to be part of my family. Dogs have a way of doing that. And Tom was surprised. Now, the puppy wouldn't let him get close, but he opened up the door to his truck, and by golly, the little thing went and jumped in. Now, at the time this was happening, all of this was going on, the weather had become a little nasty, and it was raining, and the dog just absolutely bonded with Tom, and Tom named the dog Daffy. And he would talk about him to other people as if he was his business partner. Whenever he talked about Daffy, it was always his dog. That was his business buddy. Now, it was really interesting what affected him. Because of the elderly woman that he had seen that one day, this little black dog, and I've got a picture of him in front of me, and he's just adorable. He's a mutt. He's got a mix of who knows what. And he started visiting neighborhood food banks. And he started talking to people. He said, you know, we have food here for people. And he told him the story about the elderly lady that he saw. And he said, what about collecting food for animals? Well, many of the administrators of these different food banks didn't think that was important. So this is what he started doing. He started keeping bags of dog and cat food in his truck. And cats, boy, they'll do this. They would sense which houses automatically set out food for them, and the people found out about Tom and what he was doing. And everywhere he went, he said people would just talk about their dilemmas. One person said they had to put their cats to sleep. They had three of them because they couldn't feed them. And this happened because the woman lost her job. And so he got a new nickname. He's called the pet food guy. That's how they identified him. Friends and members of family started doing something. When they found out what he was doing and the people that were helping, or being helped, I should say, they started dropping off bags. Anonymous individuals just drop off bags of dog food, cat food, and whatever they felt like contributing. And he just said, okay, I'll just put it out there, and by golly, he started developing a business with this. And veterans, believe it or not, a lot of vets are in such financial difficulty, and they love their animals. They really do. And they often have barely enough to survive themselves. A lot of our vets are homeless. And by golly, he ended up going into a whole level of work that he had never imagined. He ended up renting a warehouse and created an official nonprofit called Daffy's Pet Soup Kitchen. You can check it out on the web, Daffy's Pet Soup Kitchen. He got 6 years of support from people who just thought his idea was great. He has a huge army of volunteers now. They give out annually over 900,000 pounds of pet food. They have medications for animals with diabetes and cancers. And stores have supported him by collecting donations for pets, and he's inspired nearly 200 more pet food banks. Never think that one person cannot make a difference. And Tom's journey began because he saw an elderly lady feeding a little bit to herself and to the other animals that she loves so much. And a black dog named Daffy, who became his business partner. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy this magnificent day of life. You're special. I'm so glad you were able to join me. Have a magnificent day.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.